This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Ages and Icons. I'm Mike Crisilago.
And I'm Gina Bucci. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Gina.
So, hold on a second. I'm just adjusting your levels.
Uh-oh.
Oh, you sound good to me.
Uh-oh. Okay. Peek behind the curtain.
Coming up will be a really cool interview that Mike had with Billy Baldwin. But first, we're going to get to an interview with none other than the Hoff, David Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
So it's a doubleheader on Ages and Icons today.
And even more so, a doubleheader that you and I both interviewed David Hasselhoff.
We tag teamed the Hoff.
Yeah, it was good.
That's right. We hoffed him.
We did hoff him. So let's talk about the Hoff for a sec, because we're going to start with him. David Hasselhoff, as Gina mentions in the interview to him, directly asks him about, is known for his campiness. He's known for his campy style. You look at his career from The Young and the Restless. So he started out, you know, on that show as a soap actor,
mm-hmm.
through Knight Rider, hugely famous.
Knight Rider,
show.
The best.
Knight Rider, amazing. Gina's a huge fan.
Mike and I both gushed over the fact that we had Knight Rider tricycles.
Yeah, as kids. And now we're talking to the man from the show,
yep.
himself. But the show is about him talking, his sidekick to a talking car.
Mm-hmm.
And then Baywatch, where he's just running in slow motion with all these beautiful people on the beach for like 10 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an element of campiness to his career that he's embraced, the idea of his moniker, the Hoff, Don't Hassle the Hoff. So now he has this audiobook called Up Against the Wall that he's co-written and that he narrates and also plays all of the characters in.
Yeah.
So...
and it just comes in a very breezy 8 hours, just under... It goes by like this.
You know when you're
a
like...
very swift 8 hours.
When it's like Sunday afternoon, you want to relax. You're like, I feel like listening to an audiobook for 8 hours. So the great news is I was telling Gina off air that I was checking the reviews on Audible. And people who love David Hasselhoff love this audiobook. So, okay, let me give you a quick synopsis of what this is about. Now, keep in mind, in the promos for this and in our interview, David Hasselhoff has stated that he doesn't know which part of this audiobook, he can't recall exactly which parts of this audiobook are fiction and which parts are true to life.
Okay, Mike, so bless us with the synopsis, please.
All right, so I'm going to paraphrase the Audible synopsis. So the audiobook's called Up Against the Wall.
Up Against the Wall!
And it starts in autumn of 1989, the waning days of the Cold War.
The Cold War!
And all through the audiobook is just... Gina singing every sentence. A rogue Stasi colonel has acquired a nuclear bomb and threatens to level Berlin if and when the wall comes down. So what happens is you have this CIA agent named Nick Harper who has to come in and try to stop this rogue Stasi colonel from, you know, destroying Berlin and possibly the world because it's a nuclear bomb.
Mm-hmm.
So however, this CIA agent, Nick Harper, realizes that his identity has been compromised once he gets there for his mission. Coincidentally, he also looks identical to David Hasselhoff in 1989.
Could have been compromised because he looks identical to David
Hasselhoff? No, but his doppelganger status with David Hasselhoff actually saves his life because he ends up in West Berlin where the real David Hasselhoff is there to perform, to sing. And so fans mistake the CIA agent for David Hasselhoff. They think, oh, this is the Hoff. Meanwhile, the real David Hasselhoff, who's also now in West Berlin, travels to East Berlin as a tourist.
And does Stasi confuse him for
yes,
Nick Harper?
And they think he is the agent. So now it's like, you know, the real CIA agent is now, everybody thinks he's David Hasselhoff. Now,
that sounds
again,
possible. And so
we'll repeat, David Hasselhoff is not quite sure which parts of the story are true mm-hmm. and which are fiction. It is up to you to decide.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I could see myself forgetting that type of event, too. You know, it happens all the time. But also, the CIA can't confirm or deny if someone is an agent. So you could claim that you're a CIA agent, like Chuck Woolery did, right? Wasn't it Chuck Woolery?
Chuck Woolery claims a lot of things we should be listening to.
Who wrote that book? The movie that Confessions of a Dangerous Mind is based on.
Okay,
the George Clooney movie that Sam Rockwell starred in. It's a great movie. The guy that did The Gong Show. Chuck
Woolery. Yes.
No?
Oh, yes. I know what you mean. Chuck Barris.
Chuck Barris. Oh, my God. Thank you. Yes. Chuck Barris. Right. Chuck Barris wrote this crazy gong book about him being a CIA agent, but the CIA to this day can't confirm or deny that. And they can't do that about anybody because that's just their policy.
So what you're saying is that I'm sitting here like, you know, being a smart ass, joking about what could be true and what could not be true from this book. But David Hasselhoff could have been a CIA agent and would... And nobody, even the CIA would not confirm.
Right, and the CIA's greatest cover is the fact that it's so ridiculous, just like Chuck Barris. It's so ridiculous that he could be an agent that they wouldn't, they can't confirm or deny, but we now no one believes it because it's such a crazy concept. But the CIA has have done some provable crazy, crazy things. So I honestly, I mean, I know I sound like this out there, like wearing an aluminum hat, conspiracy theorist, but I honestly believe that like anything is possible when you involve the famed CIA.
Oh, no. So we need to get David Hasselhoff back on the phone then and ask him about this.
He won't say if he is or not, if it's true or not.
So when he's saying that, it's not just like a fun, like lighthearted way to promote the book, but he may actually be trying to get a message out there.
Or, you know, like, hey, the guy needs help. It's one or the other.
I don't think there's a third option, which is he's a fun loving guy. And you, and Gina, will, which we're going to get to the interview in a sec. But Gina asked him about like how that campiness has sort of in, like, you know, become part of his brand. And yeah. I mean, we're laughing and joking about it here. But like, but he knows this, too. Like, he obviously he's joking about this stuff. And
well, we
and
hope so.
We hope so. Unless apparently he was a CIA agent and we're just not allowed to know.
No, I'm telling you that I'm not saying he was. I'm just saying you never know.
Well. What do you say? We get to the interview and let
the people
decide?
Yeah, let's get to it. This is Mike and mine.
Yeah.
Mike and my interview? Mike, you're the writer.
Mike and I interview.
No. Here's our interview with David Hasselhoff. You shut it. It's time for the Hoff.
I'm glad you guys could make it.
Oh, we're busy bees up here. We made time for you.
In the morning. I've been doing this for 2 days now, trying to reach you guys. Where are you, in Toronto?
We are in Toronto, yeah, buried under a little bit of snow up here. We both had a chance to listen to Up Against the Wall, so I wanted to just ask you, first of all...
Hold on, Mike, it's Up Against the Wall! That's how I'm saying it.
Oh, okay.
What
was... Kind of like a porno, doesn't it?
Well, it does open up with that wonderful 80s, like, metal rock guitar. It's great.
Yeah, the metal rock guitar is actually Looking for Freedom, which is they sold 11 million singles back in 1989. And they chose that because it's kind of indicative of what really happened and why this whole happened. This whole song and the whole Berlin experience and the whole book happened, I think has a relationship with the song.
What was it that sort of brought you to the point where you said, I want to write and make this audiobook and tell this story?
In 1989, I sang to a million people of reunited some West Germans, and they were all singing Looking for Freedom. And it happened because they asked me to sing like the Dick Clark special on New Year's Eve. It's called The Sylvester Show. It's still going on. And I said, only if I can sing on the wall. And they said yes. I never expected them to say yes. And about 3 or 4 months before that, I had gone behind the wall. Actually, 6 months before that, I'd gone behind the wall because I flew over the wall. And I saw this jagged snake of a wall. And I went, wow, this is, and it was 400 kilometers long. And I said, what is that? They said, well, that's East Germany and East Berlin. And I said, it looks like black and white compared to the color of the rest of the world in Germany, and especially Berlin, because Berlin is so full of color and you know, very much larger than life. And then you go across the border, it's black and white, and there's very few people. There's potholes. It was dark and gray, and people were scared and frightened and wearing old clothing, and they were driving small, tiny cars called Trappies. And so we got into a room with a writer who is really prolific at writing. His name is David Gordon, and he's incredible. He's written a bunch of other books, and so I listened to his books, and one of his books with Branson Pinchot reading, and I went, wow, that's really good, but I don't know if I can emulate that performance or do it, because you got to do five or six characters sometimes in the same paragraph. So we decided to do it, and we came up with some crazy idea that is kind of fact or fiction, and we leave it up to the reader or the listener to decide what is true and what isn't true. And a lot of it is true, and a lot of it is not. And it's fun. It's funny. It's campy. It's action. It makes you cry. But more importantly, it tells you what really happened behind the Berlin Wall from 1945 until it was free on November 9th, 1989. And I was a part of that. And I was a part of it because I was singing a song about freedom. And I went behind the wall, and I met a lot of people for a special called National Geographic, David Hasselhoff versus the Berlin Wall. And I said, how do you know me? And they said, I've been looking for freedom, la-la-la-la-la-la. And they could sing the first line of my song, everybody in East Germany, but they could not sing the second line because they didn't study English in school. They studied Russian. And it was amazing. So the first time I went behind the wall, I met three girls, and they all recognized me and asked me for my autograph. And I said, how do you know me? You know me as the guy who talks to the car? And they thought I was crazy. You talk to a car? And I said, well, how do you know me? And they said, you're the man who sings of freedom. And East Berlin was like, you know, going from Old Town to, you know, a busy street. It was like right there. And West Berlin was right across the street. And I said, you can't go out to West Berlin? They said, no, you'll never get out. They said, probably not in our lifetime, maybe when we get old like our grandparents. And so I asked a guy to take a picture of me outside with them, because I was inside at the Grand Hotel, which was real posh and kind of tacky. And they would do that. They would have like a real tacky hotel, and they would have an amazing studio for recording, and then the rest of the town would be horrible. And so I took a picture with them and said, come back here tomorrow. Maybe I can get it in the West Berlin newspaper, and I did. So I smuggled it back in, met the three girls, and said, here's a little piece of freedom. And they screamed and cried and ran away. And David came back with an idea for the book that, and was really, it's almost as if when I was listening to it, I didn't know if it was real or not, if I did that or not. But a lot of it, I did. And a lot of it, he embellished, and we made it into something that I think is really entertaining. And I didn't know how to do an audible book. The first couple of days, I was like, oh, my God, this is horrible. This is hard. And I had nobody there to go, hello, my name is Hildy. I love you, David. You know, that's the voice of Hildy, who loves David Hasselhoff, and she suspects Nick Carter, who looks like David Hasselhoff, to be David Hasselhoff, and Nick Carter is really a spy. And David Hasselhoff meets, hello, my name is Greta, and I'm a spy, and my favorite color is red. And David Hasselhoff says, well, my favorite color is blonde, thinking he's going to pick her up. And what a great pickup line. And that's not the right line that he's supposed to give to the spy. And so now David Hasselhoff is having to play a spy. And Nick Carter is having to play David Hasselhoff, and doesn't know whether he has two F's or two S's in his name, and doesn't know how to sing, and blah, blah, blah. And it's thereby the fun ensues. It's almost like, you know, combination of Dr. Strangelove meets It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World, because there's a lot of craziness and campiness, but there's a lot of stuff that really still goes on in Berlin, especially the underground clubs and the weird people that you see them in the clubs. And I spent a lot of time in Berlin. I'm opening my tour October 3rd, which is the 30th anniversary of the reunification of Germany.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, actually, because, I mean, it all ties in with Up Against the Wall, and you're going to be going back to Germany 30 years after you were there for the fall of the Berlin Wall. What do you enjoy now at this point in your career about touring and visiting all these places, and how has it changed from when you were earlier in your career and doing the same sort of thing?
The only way that it's changed is that, you know, East Berlin and East Germany is now full of color and looks like the West. But the people are the same. It's amazing. They're still singing my song, Looking for Freedom. I'm like the one-hit wonder. They still want me to sing that song because a lot of people in the East, it meant a lot to them because they were in prison. And they were basically singing about their looking for freedom. And here was the Knight Rider who was singing about that. And the people in the West just thought it was a great song, and I was fun and entertaining, and I was the Knight Rider who stepped out of the car and into the audience and grabbed people and sang along when a lot of the German musicians, you know, weren't really into that. And I was like the happy, sunny boy American. And the fact that we're releasing the book over there, actually in German on October 3rd, is only because it coincides with the wall coming down and the reunification. But we wanted to make the book entertaining and fun and a little bit about the Hof. And it was really easy to do because people don't call me David Hasselhoff anymore. They stop me in the world and they say, Hoff! And it's just taken over. And so, of course, I'm David Hasselhoff, the father. I'm David Hasselhoff, the husband. I'm an actor first, and I'm acting when I'm doing this book.
Yeah.
And I'm acting when I'm on Knight Rider or Baywatch or the remake of Knight Rider, which hopefully will happen in this lifetime.
Well,
and we'll see what happens.
Well, Hoff, since you mention it, what do you think of
Hoff.
A possible?
You're calling me Hoff now? What's wrong with you?
I'm sorry, the Hoff. Speaking of Knight Rider,
Hoff to you. Yes.
Mr. Hoff, my apologies. Sir Hoff?
That's all right.
So, speaking of Knight Rider, which is one of my favorite shows and one of my all-time favorite theme songs, for sure, I'd like to know, what do you think that would be, like a TV series or a film? What do you think your role might be in it? Or what are you pushing
well,
for?
Well, my role right now is I'm doing an album, and we're actually recreating the theme song, as well as about 20 other people are probably going to recreate it, like David Guetta. They've all said they love the theme. In fact, so many people have cut it on their ringtones. And the movie and the TV series, they're kind of like at neck and neck right now because Universal's trying to figure out, well, should we bring in a new Knight Rider? Do David Hasselhoff be the star? Why don't you just be the father? And then there's another company that just inherited the rights, and they love me, and they want to do it my way, which is nostalgia comes into the real world, and it brings in all the people who used to love Knight Rider, like you, and then brings in their families and kids and says, this is what I watched growing up. And I still think the show, that franchise, has got a huge following. I mean, I can't go anywhere without people stopping me going, Knight Rider, can I tell you my story? Knight Rider, can I tell you my story? So it really affected people in their childhood in a cool way. I'm proud of that. So
that sounds amazing. I have a picture of myself as a kid on a little Knight Rider, like a little sort of plastic bicycle thing when I was like 3 or 4 years old.
I had one of those too.
Yeah. I had a bunch of those in my attic.
Oh, nice.
I gave them all away. I was doing a lot of work with sick children, so I got 12 of each item, right? And then I filled up my garage, and it was all gone. They were all gone because I gave them all away to kids. I wish I still had them.
Yeah, so do I.
Little Knight Rider tricycles, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I remember my mom taking me to the store and being like, well, you want the Barbie tricycle? I was like, no, actually, I want the Knight Rider car. This is great. Of course.
That's funny.
100%.
I just recently saw... I recently saw a bunch of David Hasselhoff and Pamela Anderson Barbies in a big bin, and they were like on sale for like, you know, 20 for a dollar. So I bought the whole bin. They're all in my attic. A lot of David Hasselhoffs and Pamela Andersons. I don't know if there was ever a Knight Rider. Yes, there was a Knight Rider doll.
Oh
there
yeah, was.
Yeah, there
for
should
sure.
Be one, yeah,
but. Up Against the Wall is something, if you're not into an audiobook, I really wasn't into audiobooks. I'm totally into them now. And I just order them and order them and just listen to them when I'm working out or in the car, and it's a lot of fun. You got 8 hours and 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yes, it's quite lengthy. It
goes on forever.
How long
Start
did
reading it? Oh
yeah, I was
going
to say, how long did that take you to record that?
Oh, for God's sakes, it was took me two days of throwing the script across the hall, going, I can't do this, you know? And I talked to other people. They said, Leonard Nimoy came in here, and he hated this. He could only do 3 hours, and then he would lose his mind. And I was doing like 4 to 5 hours, and I was losing my mind. And then I met other stars, you know, that said, they'll never do another one. And I said, yeah, but I'm contracted to do like 7 more. And so we'll see if this is a hit. And, you know, it's a great form of entertainment. I hope that, to be honest, I hope that we can make this the book into a TV series, and I would play like the narrator, and the Knight Rider, I would be like the Devon character, so I would be the older guy, you know, who kind of calls the shots, but,
yeah.
You know, say lines like, I can't run, I can't jump, I can't fight, but I can still drive, get in.
All right, well, the book is Up Against the Wall! That's
Very
the book.
Cool.
On Audible?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you so much, David. We really appreciate your time today. And congratulations again on the audiobook.
All right, guys. See you soon.
Good interview, us.
Yeah.
Pat's on back.
He was fun. Yeah, we weren't.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, and in, you know, full disclosure, remember, we talked before the interview. We weren't sure how, you know, if he embraced the campiness of the sort of his brand, or if he was very serious about it. So we were happy to find out when we interviewed him that he totally embraces it.
But when other people like myself call him the Hoff, I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, you hassled the Hoff.
Did I?
You threw him a little Hoff balance, I think, when you called him the Hoff. God.
Half Hoff, Mike, okay? I did my best.
No, it was fun to talk to him about, like, when we were talking about our childhoods and how...
No, Knight Rider was the
best, you and I actually. Both had the Knight Rider tricycles, and like he remembers those tricycles and how he had
Mike,
a bunch
I
of them himself.
I was obsessed with Knight Rider as a kid.
Yeah, I didn't know this about you.
Yeah. Well, I have a deep love for disco and electronica music, as I may have mentioned here once or 1,000 times. And that theme song, oh boy, oh baby, did that get into my head. And I still have that on my like workout playlist. Oh, so good.
That's right. You work out to Knight Rider.
Yeah, yeah. I do. I work out to lots of theme songs, but that one's there for sure. And just the best. Just I loved the car. I loved the leather jacket. I loved everything. I loved it.
Yeah. I got to ask you one day, what are the best television theme songs to work out to?
Dynasty Dallas, Knight Rider. Done. No, there's a few more.
It's,
so anyway.
It's interesting, too, with David Hasselhoff, how he's like, he's going on tour now in Germany as well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he's not coming to Canada, but hopefully he'll make it here at some point. But we were talking earlier about his career, too, how it has been so varied. And you look at what he did, like Baywatch. He started Baywatch. It had like a decade-long run. He started it when he was 37.
Yeah.
So
that's when he started?
He started at age 37. So by the time it was over, he was like through his mid to late 40s, you know, running around on the beach.
I think it was 10 years, the original Baywatch
ran. Yeah, it was a decade,
yeah,
basically. And then he did, there was like other, you know,
and then Baywatch Hawaii Nights?
Baywatch Nights.
And Baywatch
Hawaiian, no, there was Baywatch Hawaiian Wedding.
Oh. Yeah, I think I saw that movie, actually.
Why I know all this, I don't know. But, I mean, it's pretty remarkable, actually, when you think about it. Like, here's a guy who made a career of, oh, first I'll be a soap opera actor. Then I'm going to be in a show where I can just talk to a really cool car.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
I'm going to spend a decade
running. And self-crimes, Mike. Okay.
Yeah, and self-crimes. And then I'm going to spend a decade running on a beach and, like, lounging in the sun and, you know, spend around all these beautiful women. Like, this guy should be, like, a career coach.
Okay, so that was the Hoff. Now let's jump into Billy Baldwin.
Billy Baldwin, yeah, one of the famed Baldwin brothers. No cool nickname like the Hoff, but
cool wife in China Phillips.
Cool wife in China, and a cool dude nonetheless.
Yeah.
The guy was awesome. He was really sweet. We met up with him down at the CBC building in Toronto. Unfortunately, Gina wasn't there for this one. You were.
I was on vacation from you, Mike.
Yeah.
You're very stressful, you know.
I drove her away. So she was somewhere nice and lovely, and I was here
drove
in cold Toronto.
Drove me to a beach and pina colada is what you did. Anyway, so you interviewed him at CBC for his new show.
Yeah, it's called Northern Rescue. It's on CBC Gem. It's streaming and also on Netflix. And if you haven't checked it out already, he plays a widower who moves his family up north. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit confusing because it seems like it's like northern Canada, like northern Ontario, I mean. But the show doesn't really specify if it's Canada or America. So anyway.
Oh, is it one of those things where it's like, this could be Oregon?
I think it starts, it's very specifically in America at the beginning when his wife passes away. But then when they move up north to live with her sister, so the sister can help Billy Baldwin's character raise his three children, while he also works as a search and rescue.
Yeah. Somewhere north, essentially.
Yeah. So anyway, it's filmed in Parry Sound, okay. Ontario.
Got it.
And so he was spending, I mean, you were away on vacation on the beach. He spent last summer just chilling out on the beaches in Parry Sound in between filming. He talked about how much he loves it.
Parry Sound's beautiful. I've been there.
Yeah, yeah. And we were joking that Billy's kind of the Canadian Baldwin brother, mm-hmm. because he's in Toronto and across Canada so often for his movies and TV shows. He just started rhyming off all of these places that he's filmed. Yeah. And it's really cool, too, actually, because we don't talk about it a lot in the interview, but if you do a search online, he does a ton of charity work, Ontario particularly, with Sick Kids Hospital, mm-hmm. like every year. I think it's been going on like 10 years now. He comes here for some like boat races in Muskoka and other, for the Sick Kids, and I believe other charities as well. Like
that's so nice,
really
to hear.
Involved.
Yeah.
Really involved. It's not just I came to Toronto once and I tell the same story about it every time I get
asked.
No,
he's been here like, what did he say, 20 times or a lot?
Yeah, yeah, over the last
actually,
like 20
more
years
than that, yeah.
Or 30 years, and then also across Canada, mm-hmm. filming. You look at his history, he's used to playing heroes, including Backdraft, which is one of his most famous movies.
Oh, yes. Fun fact, Mike, do you know he turned down Thelma and Louise for Backdraft?
Did he really?
Yes. He was supposed to be, obviously, the Brad Pitt character, not the Gina Davis character, but which in turn made Brad Pitt famous, obviously.
Right.
But that was his big break. But Baldwin was cast in that role originally and then got Backdraft.
Wow.
Obviously, was the lead in a big Hollywood film. I mean, I don't blame him. How do you not make that choice from being in a supporting role to being a star in this big film with Kurt Russell and De Niro and huge cast?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and it's still like his most famous movie. Like when you think of
Billy Baldwin, would you say so?
Yeah, I don't think there's. Have
you not seen Fair Game with Cindy Crawford? How dare you? That's actually a great movie. I mean, it's awful. It's an awful movie, and she's like, her performance is, oh, buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, it's fun.
Like Sliver. I remember watching Sliver when I was
But Sliver's not as fun. Fair Game is like ridiculously bad that it's a fun movie to watch, especially with a group of people if you're into that type of thing. I highly recommend it for that kind of movie. But Sliver's not as fun. But Backdraft for me, a little boring. You?
Yeah, I saw it a long time ago. I don't remember being like, oh, my God, I need to rewatch this.
Yeah, but, is that Ron Howard?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, I mean,
I think so, yeah.
It's still, to me, I think it's his most well-known movie. Like when, anyway, but I mean, in this show, in Northern Rescue, he really does come off like a very fatherly type. And it seems like a role that really fits him. Like he can be tender, but he's also like a take charge sort of guy that'll come, you know, save you when you're stuck out in a pontoon boat in the middle of the lake up north.
Oh, yeah. That's the perfect kind of guy to come save you. Tender and in charge.
Tender
and in charge. That's right. I'll take it any day of the week. Okay, so let's jump right into Mike's interview with Billy Baldwin.
Let's just jump right in and talk about Northern Rescue. What was it that attracted you to this show in the first place?
Work.
Yeah.
No, I mean, there's a lot of variables that go into it. My friend Bradley Walsh is a Toronto-based director and producer, and he called me and said he was developing this idea with Don Carmody and Don Carmody Productions. Mm-hmm. And it was a family drama, and one of the lead characters in the ensemble was the father of this family, who was a search and rescue commander. He loses his wife, and he's struggling to figure out how to strike the proper balance of being the mother and the father and a search and rescue commander, the provider for the family. And I was drawn to the character. I was drawn to the concept. I was drawn to the fact that Netflix is interested in moving more heavily into family drama. Of course, CBC has had a home there for many, many years. Netflix is interested in moving into that space, if you will. So we pitched it to CBC. They seemed to like it. The pitch went very well. And then they had this co-pro concept where we went out to LA and pitched it to Netflix. And we were off and running. We shot the first season up in Parry Sound, and we were there at the right time of the year. We were there June, July, August, and September. And we had a terrific melding of mostly Toronto-based crew, but we hired a bunch of local people in the Parry Sound, but the greater sort of Muskoka area.
Right, and just judging from the first episode, which I was seeing, I mean, so much of your role involves the parenting aspect, and as you mentioned, taking on the role of mother and father, and your family's going through this seismic shift. How much of your own experience as a parent, a father of three, have you brought to this role?
Well, quite a bit. I think my kids are going to... A lot of times I play stuff that's not too far from who I am, but I play a cop. I've never been a cop. I play a fireman. I'll play a politician. Here, I'm playing a search and rescue commander, emergency services. But more what's at the heart of the character in the show is that he's a dad. And I draw a lot from, I don't know how it turned out this way, but there's a girl, boy, girl, and I have girl, boy, girl, 18, 17, and 14, which were 17, 16, and 13
when
we started the show last year. So they kind of modeled it after the experience that Chana and I have. And, you know, it's interesting to know what your role is and to know how to stay in your lane as a parent. And when it comes to health and wellness and illness and stuff like that, I completely leave it to my wife. And when it comes to tutoring and academics and college and whether you're taking AP courses and communicating with the teachers and stuff like that, that's the hat, you know, that's the major hat that I wear. So when my wife goes on the road with her band, the kids literally eat pizza five nights in a row, and if they get a cold or a cough, I take the cough medicine with codeine, and it's prescribed to give you like one teaspoon, and I give them like five tablespoons because I have no desire to be dealing with a sick kid at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'd rather just drug them and knock them out until their mother gets home, and then their mother can like rub their back at 3 a.m. and rub their feet and, you know, do sing them lullabies like she used to. I'm like, no, just take this medication, go back to bed, leave me alone, okay? So now I've got to do all of it all the time because I've lost the character. John West has lost his wife, who is played really, really wonderfully by Michelle Nolden. We have a terrific cast. I'm the only American in the cast or the crew.
Oh, wow.
Everybody's from the Parry Sound in Toronto area and the crew. And it's an all-Canadian cast except for me. It's Michelle Nolden plays my wife, and Kathleen Robertson plays her sister and my sister-in-law.
Right.
She's amazing. Kathleen is amazing. Such a terrific talent and such a really interesting career. She's got a big-time A-list writing career going on as well. She's writing projects right now for Julia Roberts. She's writing a project for Charlize Theron and a couple of others. She just picked up another big movie. I think it might be a studio movie. So how she has time to squeeze us in, you big shot. And then, of course, there's Amalia Williamson and Spencer McPherson and Taylor Thorne, who round out the ensemble cast for the show.
And, I mean, you've, aside from this project, you've had a lot of experiences up here in Canada, working up here, coming up here for charity work and other things. I mean, what are some of your favorite memories or reminiscences of being up here in Canada?
Well, I love it up here. I mean, the expertise and the excellence with filmmaking is, you know, unparalleled. They're as good as, they're better than everybody in the world. They're just as good as Bollywood. They're just as good as Hollywood. Yeah. And it's been that way for a long time. Very polite.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I saw during the, I saved these political cartoons, and I found this one when I'm always searching for my cartoons, but it was during the whole Trump build the wall thing, and it was a cartoon that said Mexican standoff, and it had two guys with like bandoleros and sombreros on pointing guns at each other. It was adjacent to another cartoon that said Canadian standoff, and it was somebody holding a door, and they were both saying, no, after you, no, after you, no, no, after you, no, please, after you. And I saved that one. I've got that on my phone somewhere. I'll have to send it. It's just hilarious. Mexican standoff and Canadian standoff.
It's accurate.
I have made films from sea to shining sea in Canada. I've made them in St. Stephen's, Quebec, Montreal, Sudbury, Parry Sound, Toronto, Winnipeg, Calgary, Banff, Lake Louise, and of course Vancouver. Yeah. I've made one or two projects in Montreal. I've probably made more than a half a dozen in Vancouver, and probably 15 projects I've done here.
Oh, wow.
In Toronto, not including Parry Sound, and not including, I'd have to check my IMDb, yeah, but I have to have done 20 different projects here. And I've done a lot of, forget all the fundraising, I did a lot of stuff in Banff Hot Springs and Chateau Lake Louise, and here for Sick Kids, I do a car rally,
right,
every November, and a boat rally in Muskoka every July. And I've done those events for Sick Kids. Geez, I don't think it's 10 years yet, but it's getting close.
Wow. So you're practically like an honorary Canadian.
I am.
At this
there's
point.
No doubt. There's no doubt. I mean, I with this show, I'm paying my Canadian taxes, yeah, that's for sure. And it's just great. I mean, I've watched this town change so much. When I first started coming here, I don't think the population of Toronto was 2 million.
Oh, wow.
30 years ago, what was the population, yeah, of Toronto? When I first started coming here, they told me the population of Toronto was like 1.5 million, pushing, heading towards 2 million.
Yeah, I could
now,
see that.
What is the greater area when you go all the way up to Vaughan?
I was going to say it's up there.
It's like 9.
8 or 9,
okay,
yes. Yeah,
okay, so then
like
forget that. What's the city proper? Is it 3.5?
I think
and
it's 3.5, something like that.
It's pushing,
yeah,
4.
Yeah.
I wonder what the population was if it was that low 30 years ago. Could this city have tripled in population in 30 years? Tripled?
I mean, the number of condos and housing that's been built in just the last 5, 10 years
is insane. I love it. I love the people, and I love the film industry, and I love the culture, and I love the food. The food has just exploded in this town.
Yeah.
And you got some good sports teams here too.
Yeah.
You know, between the Raptors are pretty damn good, and the Jays are always, you know, always
they're
scrapping.
Okay, yeah.
They're
Leafs are coming up.
And I'm a Yankee fan. We just got AJ Happ.
J Happ.
What's his name?
J A Happ.
J A Happ. I was gonna say AJ Happ. We needed a lefty, and you know, the people are just really, really super cool. Canadians are a little odd. They are, their sense of humor and their sensibility is a little off. It's not, and it's good. It's rooted in like intellect in a way that I like, but it is weird. I did this movie once with Quentin Tarantino, because it was called Curdled, and it was about this woman's infatuation with a serial killer, and she winds up applying for a job with a local cleaning service that the coroner hires to clean up a crime scene after they've conducted the investigation. And she wants to be closer to the serial killer, and she wants to study him because she's so infatuated and sort of enthralled by him. And I play this like dashing, dapper serial killer. And it's very dark and twisted. It was called Curdled. It's very dark and twisted. And I can't tell you how many times I get stopped and people say to me, "You're my favorite movie of yours. I love Flatliners, and I love Internal Affairs, and I love Backdraft." And I get a lot of "I love Backdraft." And every once in a while, I get somebody come and go, "You want to know what my favorite movie was?" And I go, "Backdraft." And I'm like, "No. Curdled." No one's ever even heard of Curdled. They're like, "Curdled." I'm like, "Where are you from in Canada?" And they're like, "How did you know that?" Because Canadians love like dark, twisted, smart humor, don't they?
Yeah, I think
so. You've had
yeah.
some of the greatest comedians and some of the darkest comedians
absolutely.
In the history of the world.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Jim Carrey?
Jim Carrey,
doesn't
yeah.
doesn't get more dark and more brilliant than that guy.
Yeah.
And I mean dark, you know, as a compliment. He's a very... He's terrifying. He's scary how talented he is.
Yeah. And, I mean, you brought up Backdraft, and I read that you're working on a sequel.
Yeah, we shot it. We shot it in May. We're done. It's in the can.
So
don't know. I'm going to find out this week when they're releasing it.
And also with the Canadian Donaldson.
It's a Universal Netflix production, too.
Oh, right, right.
It's a Universal
yeah.
Netflix co-pro, yeah.
And with Canadian Donald Sutherland?
Yes, yeah. yes. We were reunited.
what was that like? Like 20
amazing.
Years
ago? I just yeah. did, you know, a while ago now, like 10 years ago, I did a show called Dirty Sexy Money for
right.
NBC. And I played Patrick Darling, the scion of the family, the politician. He was a mm-hmm. senator running for president. And he played my father, who was he had a great name. His name was Tripp Darling.
Oh, okay.
And he was kind of a Joe Kennedy type of character. And I just had, that's a show I could have done for 10 years. Yeah. We got hit hard with the economic downturn in 2008, 2009. We ran the half a season in 2007. The writer's strike ended the first season, and then we did a second season in 2008. And every day on the way to work, the radio kept saying the greatest economic crisis since the Great Depression. You'd hear that like 15 times a day. And ABC, you know, I guess rightfully so, you know, kind of panicked and pulled a plug on that and every show that was on their slate that season. The only show that survived was the spinoff from Grey's Anatomy. I think it was called Private Practice.
Sounds Private Practice, something like that. Yeah,
I think they're still on the air. But we had a number of big shows that were on the air: Cashmere Mafia, and Big Shots, and a show called Pushing Daisies that was absolutely the biggest critical darling of that season.
Yeah, I remember that.
Everything got wiped out because of the Wall Street meltdown.
But to go back to this character, like 20 years later, what is that like for you as an actor, and especially this role? I mean, people love, like you said, the first one.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, you know, this isn't the kind of film that you put into, you know, a time capsule and shoot it into space and never to be touched again. It's not like it was, you know, on the waterfront or something.
Sure.
But it was a great little movie, and Ron did a group, and made, everybody did, but especially Ron Howard. It was just so wonderful. And so they came up with a really good, when they, I'm like, okay, all these years later, like, walk me through how we're going to do this. And they came up with this great storyline of, you know, I won't give away too much, but when Kurt Russell's character dies in the original, Stephen Bull McCaffrey, he leaves behind a son who's like 8 or 9 years old. And here we go, you know, 25 years later, he's like a 29, 30-year-old fireman, much like the father. You know, Apple falls very close to the tree, big chip on his shoulder, quasi-estranged from my character, Brian McCaffrey. And you'll see some moments that are reminiscent of the first one, but it won't be Brian and Stephen. It'll be... it won't be brother to brother, it'll be, you know, uncle's nephew.
Right.
And it was, that production had some challenges because the original one we did in 1991 for probably $40 to $45 million, and this one we did 30 years later for probably $8 million. So
yeah,
it presents, we took advantage of a lot of, you know, tax credits and stuff like that. It'll probably look like a $20 million film on the screen. And the original writer, Greg Wyden, came back to I think he's co-producing, and he wrote this screenplay too.
Yeah. And I know we got to go. I just wanted to ask you very quickly one last Canadian connection, because everybody's talking about your niece Haley and Justin Bieber and their marriage. And I know you've been married for, I think, 24 years now, you and China?
I'm married 22 years, going on 23. 23 years, going on 24.
Yeah.
And together 28 in April.
Which is amazing. And
yeah.
And in particular, as everybody always says, like a show business.
Mm-hmm.
And
I talked to Haley about that. You know,
yeah, like what sort of advice you have.
They've been friends for a long time. They've been kids. And Stephen and Kenya have been friends with Haley's mom and dad for on and off for years. And they go to church together, and they go bowling together. I have pictures of them bowling together when Haley was like 12 or 13 years old. They've known each other for a long time. They've become very close and very good friends. In recent years, and they've been dating sporadically on and off for a couple of years, and they're just a crazy cool young couple. They're madly in love, and I told them, you know, you have an uncle who and an aunt who have been in a showbiz relationship for 28 years, and we've raised 3 kids, and I know what it's like to be married to someone who's a lead singer in a band and who goes on the road and has, you know, Grammy nominations and number one singles and sold millions of records. And if you ever need advice, I don't know, you know, just don't be afraid to, don't hesitate.
Well, Billy, thank you so much, and congratulations again on the show.
Thank you.
We're back. Good job, Mike.
You know, when you're sitting across from Billy Baldwin and he's got that like Baldwin squint and the Baldwin sort of whisper voice and
the Baldwin eyes.
And the Baldwin eyes.
Did you fall in love, Mike? It sounds like Mike fell in love.
I didn't fall in love, but eventually every once in a while you're listening to the question, the answer to your question, and you get lost in it, and then you go to say like, so anyway, you know, Billy, but you have to like remind, wait, it's Billy. It's not Alec. It's not Steven. It's not Daniel. It's Billy. Like,
because
they're all.
Because his voice is so similar?
Yeah, just, the voice and the eyes, like squint. Mostly, like, he reminds me the most of Alec. So,
yeah, he does.
And
look
you're
a lot
so used to seeing
like him,
Alec everywhere, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you kind of just.
He still does look like a young Alec Baldwin. Like, okay, Alec Baldwin's face has changed actually quite a bit, I find, over the years. Yeah. Early, like, 80s Baldwin looks a lot like Billy Baldwin.
Yeah, I could see that.
Is it just me? No.
I don't know if he's, like, exactly like him. I wouldn't mistake the two.
They're good-looking guys.
And both of them were, like, look like models, and actually Billy was a model when he was younger. So, I mean.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite parts of that, I mean, we were talking about his Canadian connections before. One of my favorite parts of this interview was when he started talking about that movie Curdled.
Yeah.
That I hadn't heard of before.
I think I had seen a trailer for that before.
Yeah, I looked it up
back in my video store days, yeah.
And it looks like everything he said it is. But
it actually looks kind of fun, to be honest. It looks very 90s VHS type.
It's very campy, yeah, but I mean, whatever.
Type of movie, but it looks fun, yeah.
I just love that he knew he could tell that you're Canadian if you love that movie.
I could see that.
All right, so we should mention that the Up Against the Wall, David Hasselhoff's audiobook, is available on audible.ca.
Up Against the Wall!
If you order now, you can get a special edition that has Gina singing like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not actually. Don't actually order it for that.
Speak for yourself.
If you send us an email, maybe Gina can just send you an audio file. And also Northern Rescue.
Or I'll come to your house and do it. There you go. I have nothing else to do.
And Northern Rescue is streaming now on CBC Gem and on Netflix.
Northern Rescue! Does that work?
It's not quite the same. How about Curdled?
No.
Curdled!
Actually, Curdled does work like that in the 80s. If you guys are lost with what we're doing, it's like the 80s guitar, like a metal type of singing.
But they're
my favorite.
Curdled's from the 90s.
Yeah.
This is Hoff the Rails.
It certainly is. Well, this was a fun one.
It was.
Yeah.
Where can listeners find more of these engaging repartees back and forth?
Well, glad you asked that, Mike. You can find us on everythingzoomer.com and also Ages and Icons. And also you can find our podcast pretty much wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. I don't know. I might be missing something, but.
And this isn't even a joke, but David Hasselhoff tried to launch his own social media website called Hoffspace.
Mm-hmm.
It was a takeoff on MySpace, but it's called Hoffspace, where you could join and have an account like you would have on MySpace or Facebook or whatever.
Brilliant idea.
Had Hoffspace taken off.
It made millions of dollars. Oh, it didn't take off.
No, it did not. Shockingly.
I have money invested in there.
But if
I better call my guy.
If Hoffspace had taken off. Then we would also be available on Hoffspace.
Oh.
Ages and Icons.
Wow, Mike, that was a long
that was a
way
long
coming,
way around.
That joke.
All right, we should probably just thank David Hasselhoff for his time. And we really enjoyed the interview, David. We had a lot of fun talking to you, so thank you.
The Hoff's and the best. Dream come true.
Yeah, it was a blast, and it was a dream come true for Gina. Thanks for making our dreams
really
come
was.
True. That's what we're all about here at Ages and Icons. And also, Billy Baldwin, thank you for your time as well. And to everybody listening, to Gina. And we'll see you next time on Ages and Icons.
How can I work in goodbye and Hoff and Hafidasang? Hafidasang. Like Avidasang? Avidasang.
What is that?
Hoff. And then Avidasang means goodbye in German.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't
know
that?
Why would I know that?
Everyone knows Avidasang. Avidasang. It's what? Aren't you a fan of Sound of Music?
Yeah.
Goodbye, farewell. Avidasang.
But that does work in German and Hoff.
I know. The German and Hoff. Well, if you can't get it, no one's going to get it. I'm too smart for my own good.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.